you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Star Wars Minute. It's your daily show in which we analyze, scrutinize, and celebrate The Last Jedi one sanctimonious minute at a time. I'm Alex Robinson from alexrobinson.fun.
I'm Pete the Retailer from petetheretailer.com.
And I'm Chrysanthi Tan from Star Wars Music Minute, and I also have music everywhere online. Chrysanthi Tan, you can just look it up.
Everywhere.
Everywhere
there's not a single
be.
Place where it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Well, welcome back. Thanks for joining us here for Minute 57. Minute 57 starts off with Finn and Rose experiencing the excitement that only comes with fanfare racing. And it ends a minute later with BB-8 arriving to join in on the fun.
Now, I've been looking forward to this minute for a while because, since we started this movie, you've been pronouncing father years in a variety of ways. And you were like, is it? I don't know.
That's they not never gone unnoticed.
They never say it.
They never say it out loud in the movie.
And everybody's like, does he not know that they say it in the movie? Don't tell him. I want to see what he keeps doing. And a couple of people have brought it up, and it's been this moment. We're going to wait and let him hear it in the movie. And the very first word in this minute is Rose saying father years.
Father years.
Take
father
years. That.
No, I am your father.
Exactly. It's like that. So I'm excited for you to be presented with this. It's like the key to the city. Like, Alex, here is Rose saying father years.
Mia frickin' culpa already. Mm. yes, we get to see the father race go on.
Yeah.
And I was very happy to see we get a binoculars shot. Always a Star Wars staple, someone looking through binoculars, and then you see it from their point of view.
I have to say, for the richest place that we've seen yet, these binoculars look the cheapest. They look kind of plasticky and low-quality binoculars. They don't look like they have heft to them, whereas like Luke's binoculars, even though they're kind of boxy and beat up, they look like they're doing something. And of course, the Hoff
those
binoculars.
Are utility
and the droid's
those
binoculars.
Are utility binoculars. These are cheap seats, tourist binoculars.
Mm. That's true. I guess the people who need these are the people who couldn't afford to get up close. So they are.
Or don't have their own like opera glass.
Right.
You know, like.
Right.
Plus, they're all glitz and no substance. Mm. They're like fancy on the outside, like gold plated and whatever. But. Sort of like props.
Yeah.
Well, they also have one advantage that I don't think any other binoculars we've seen yet have, which is that when Finn looks through them, not only can he see stuff happening
they
from far
in.
Away, he can hear the guy talking and he can hear the guy getting zapping the animal and stuff. So they do have a feature that other binoculars do not have, which is microphone, like acoustic. It's like a spy binoculars. You
binocular.
Listen in on people.
I'm thrilled that you made that observation.
Are we assuming that he's actually hearing that, or is that just we're hearing that because we're watching it? But
I think we're seeing it through his eyes and hearing it through his ears.
Hmm.
Well, I mean, what else? What do you mean? Like,
Well, that just could be us, you know, our privileged position as viewers of the film. We're hearing it, but it's not necessarily what he's hearing.
I don't think it matters, because the point of zooming in on what he sees in the binoculars is that he gets the point of what they're trying to convey, and we get the point that we get the same point that Finn gets.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is bad. That is bad.
Yes.
This actually made me even it kind of reminded me of what I get frustrated about with Finn's arc, is that this is kind of like Finn, you know, seeing these kids who are basically slaves of the Fanthier trainer. Like, that really should strike a chord with Finn, because he was basically a child soldier captured by the First Order.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
does strike a chord with him, does it not?
Well, yeah. but it also in the Rise of Skywalker, and in the Rise of Skywalker, he's totally fine just killing off as many First Order soldiers as he can in that movie. So I always thought his arc should have been, I'm going to go help the other people who are enslaved by the First Order that I was lucky enough to escape from. But he's just like, nah, I don't care. I'm just going to kill them all. So.
Well.
I mean, it doesn't really specifically have to do with this minute, but it's just, it reminded me of, oh, look, there's these kids enslaved just like Finn was. So.
But it seems like, you know, they don't want to be there. Whereas a lot of the First Order soldiers seem like, even if they're, you know, they've been essentially brainwashed, they seem like, you know, they're still into it. Whereas Finn had that moment of, I don't think he's
right.
He's not going to be able to convince people that they're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But he does meet up with, you know, the other group of, in the Rise of Skywalker, he does meet up with the other group of ex-stormtroopers who also had that kind of moral awakening, and so he does, you know, I don't think he could be,
but anyway, but in this minute he is, you know, like you said, he is affected by it, so in the context of this minute, it does, you know, it does make Finn sort of wake up to what's going on,
right? Although I would
also, the kids are being abused and that's where the chain is stopping, whereas with the First Order troopers, it's like, yeah, they've been, you know, potentially abused, and they're also harming others. So I think there's, a whole other. These kids aren't trying to kill anyone.
Well, not yet.
Yeah.
But we do get to see slave driver Bargwell Tomder. The guy who's beating the Fanthier, and also I guess presumably the children. And he, now I don't care what species, I don't care what universe you're from, that guy is ugly. If you look at his face, and it even says he has an infected ingrown nose tendrils, so no one good reason why he's working down in the horse farms.
I'm sure he's pretty to someone though.
Was there a Mrs. Bargwell?
I don't know.
I do think it's
across the board in films. I think it's a little bit lazy when bad people are just given
gross,
whatever, you know, society thinks are ugly characteristics.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. It would have been more interesting to be like, if you flip flop, and we'll get to this tomorrow. I will want to talk to it tomorrow when we talk about it tomorrow when we see him. But what if you flip flopped the slave driver and master code breaker? You know, if the traditionally handsome Justin Theroux was the slave driver, and the the quote unquote hideous monster was the master codebreaker. But we'll talk about that tomorrow, because there's a whole another wrinkle to that.
Got it. Okay. Well, I will just say, let it be on the record that hideous is just always a cultural construct, and so I don't subscribe to that.
Right.
But I also think that, like, portraying quote unquote hideous people in films ends up feeding into mistreatment of people who actually might look like that, which humans do look like a lot of things and have a lot of things.
I agree that it would have been a good lesson to include in a Star Wars movie, as opposed to, like, say, Poe, you should do what you're told. Like, that kind of a, I think would have been a bigger message than that. But It's the same thing with, like, you know, I've said it before about prosthetics and stuff. Every character we meet who's like a cyborg or has, you know, a metal arm is a bad guy in the film, except for Luke, of course.
Right.
I don't like that Bargwell sounds. There's a certain sound that a lot of the Disney era aliens have, and he is like, that same kind of voice. And I don't like that. I would like to see a wider diversity of voices from aliens in the film. So,
like a high pitched, like a, hey, you kids, get back to work. Like,
yeah, or something like that. Yeah. You know, whole high falsetto voice.
Yeah. So I do. So this conversation, where Rose is kind of giving us a little exposition about her backstory.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that should lead to Finn being like, oh, where are you from? Maybe I bombed it. Like, cause that, you know, he was with the First Order, granted not for, you know, he was not actively, boots on the ground stormtrooper for very long at all, but he was.
Do we know that for a fact?
I believe that his, you know, the beginning of the Force Awakens, that the raid that we see him on is his first official raid, his first official kind of operation as a stormtrooper.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember where that was, where that came from, but I remember hearing that. But
that's surprising.
Finn is clueless, though. Finn is so clueless.
Yeah.
And he is, I know you've read the book, Pete, and
I started to, and then I don't know where I put it.
Okay. Here somewhere. Well, in this part, I mean, Rose is really trying to psychoanalyze Finn throughout a lot of this, because she's like, why is Finn so weird and obsessed with Rey? What is up with him? And this is sort of the point where she's starting to think, like, okay, he was raised a trooper. Okay. Maybe like babies do when they latch on to the first person they see. Maybe like he's just latched onto Rey because Rey's like the first person that he really became friend. Like, that's the first friend. And so that's all he can think about. That's what he knows outside of being a First Order trooper. And Rose in the book, like, goes through this whole like journey of like, okay, I'll just be understanding of him. And okay, this is what, cause it's clear that she kind of likes him, I think, in the book. And Finn just keeps, he just keeps acting like he does in the film, which is, where's Rey? I don't know what's going on. But of course the Canto Bite is, I think this section is where he starts to grow. And
not literally.
That was the end.
It'd be funny if he physically grew.
His heart grew 3 sizes.
Yeah.
The Big Finn theory.
And then he did put his fist through the entire town because he got so big that he could.
Oh.
See? That's the.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
notice how the source music, how the is now heard through the door. We don't hear it loud like the score. We hear it clearly like it's supposed to be coming from inside. And that's what tells me that it's not incidental. It's what tells me it's supposed to be the people in the casino can hear that performance. Yeah.
The music is coming from inside the house.
Mm-hmm. Which is also like to bring up, not that this is George Lucas, but to bring up American Graffiti, which is why I think that film sounds like it has, I feel like that sound, even though it's has so many songs, like that's the whole thing of American Graffiti is there's so much music in it. It sounds almost quiet to me. It sounds like almost like a silent film to me because there's no score. And so the music isn't like, you know, like we hear music through the radio and we hear it filtered through like someone's car, but then it shuts and then we don't hear it anymore. So like there is music, but it's very clearly like the soundtrack to the characters, not the soundtrack to the audience. So it actually, for me, like this conversation between Rose and Finn, even though the music is playing in the background in the casino, it doesn't sound like it's, it sounds like they're having a quiet conversation until Rose's theme starts.
Mm-hmm. Which again, we normally have a privileged position as the viewer that we get extra music and we get extra sound and stuff like that, that the characters might not get. But here, the music being kind of diegetic makes it seem like, you know, we're just experiencing it as they are. So,
yeah. Which I like.
You know what I like, and we don't see enough of in this minute, even though we get a flash of it, is jockey silks.
Jockey silks.
Just the outfits hunter. That the father jockeys are wearing. And I like them in real life. I like them in Star Wars. I like them. I like that look for some reason. Why am I attracted to it? Is it because I grew up kind of looking at the Sergeant Pepper cover a lot, and it looks kind of like that. But there's very kind of bright block color, you know, single color shiny outfits. I'm a big fan of that.
They look like Power Rangers to me.
Is that what their whole outfit is called? A silk.
Yeah, they're like your outfit as a jockey is called your silks, and it's also like they're kind of coated. It's combining a couple of things that I like, I guess. It's because it's also very specific to that jockey or that team, so you can tell who they are just
it's
by
like
that.
Medieval times.
Yes, kind okay. of. So you can see,
like the Green Knight and the Checkered Knight and
So it's almost like you know, nautical flags or something like that, but on a person, so you can see kind of from a distance. It helps you identify what you're looking at, which is neat. I like that. I like that whole system. I like that. And I like it here, and I wish we would have seen more of them. They are in, as Alex is about to mention, they are in the visual guide.
This is true.
I thought you were going to give us more dope about that, because it's like it is something I would like to, you know, it's an aspect that I get it. It has no real bearing on the plot. And, you know, you can argue what you will about this whole segment having no bearing on the plot. But I think as long as we're here, there's a real interesting part of this that we're not, that I would like to see more of. And that's the jockeys and their silks. Although, again, that could be a thing for a separate story. And, you know, the moral of the story is going to introduce us to, you know, that this whole father racing is immoral. Much of it, and there's parallels to be drawn, you know, like I like jockey silks and stuff like that as a concept, but I don't, you know, I'm not a real fan of horse racing here, but father racing in a sci-fi or space opera film, I want to see more of that besides the little three pictures of them that we see in the visual guide.
What do you mean by you don't like horse racing here? Do you mean in The Last Jedi, or you mean like racing doesn't fit in Star Wars?
I mean here on Earth. I'm not a big fan of it.
Oh, right.
Even though I like looking at silks and I like racehorse names and I like jockey silks, but I don't like you know,
you're more of a dog racing guy.
I don't like riding other animals until they die. Like, that's not a good thing that we should support. But I do.
These really bother me. The Fathiers really bother me. Not the existence of them in Star Wars.
Okay.
I appreciate that because I think it's a conversation that we need to have. Usually when I critique Star Wars, it's from the perspective of I feel like I live in there.
Right. It's good.
I feel like I'm very, maybe I'm a strange fan for it, but I very easily take to whatever's thrown in front of me, whether or not objectively one would think it's good filmmaking or not. I very easily take things as like, okay, yeah, I believe, like I take everything at face value. And even if I don't like it, I'm like, well, that's canon now. Like it, I don't know. It's hard for me to separate those things and to even imagine alternate ways that films could have been made or stories could have been told. Because once I know a piece of information, my brain has a hard time removing that. And does that make sense at all? Like,
yeah.
It just, Fathiers exist. And so I'm into it. But as someone who lives in Star Wars, I do not like the Fathier industry at all either.
Right.
And something that really bothers me in discussions of Canto Bight and in the Canto Bight book is like, even Rose and Paige, they love Fathiers. Okay. So they love Fathiers. It's their favorite animal, whatever. They've never seen one in real life. Just would love to ride a Fathier one day. There's also a sympathetic character in the book who is one of the stable people. She works in the stable and, you know, she has her favorite Fathier and, you know, someone's trying to to change the feed and, like, you know, hurt her poor Fathier and, like, he's sick and, like, she really cares for him and, like, doesn't like how he's mistreated and everything. And, like, it's this very, like, animal rights sort of, you know, this Fathier, like, she really cares. And then just offhandedly, it's like, and her biggest dream one day is to become a Fathier racer. And I'm like, see, those things in my head don't line up. And so that story kind of ends with like, they make some deal where then she ends up not having to do that job anymore. And she starts getting Fathier riding lessons. And I'm like, how it doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense.
Although,
how you can be an ethical Fathier racer.
I think it's also consistent with Earth attitudes.
Human.
I think a
True.
Lot of, yeah. I think a lot of people, you know, who would consider themselves horse people and not like centaurs, but like horse, you know, people who are into horses and love their horses. And they're also, you know, the ones who ride the horses and not necessarily always in racing, but in ways that might not be, you know, necessarily the best for the horse.
I agree. So in that sense, it is a realistic portrayal. It just
right.
bothers me on Earth and on Canto Bight.
Right.
Bothers me in both places. And a difference between Earth and Canto Bight is that on Earth, horses are considered sentient beings.
Hmm.
In Star Wars, Fathiers are not considered sentient.
Hmm.
What do you mean they're considered? Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. So like, sentience on Earth would be like, I don't know, all animals. You can, like, chickens and horses and humans, we're all sentient beings because we can feel sensations, right?
Hmm.
So in Star Wars, sentience means a different thing.
Hmm.
In Star Wars, humans are sentient, Wookiees are sentient, Nemoidians are sentient. Like, a lot of the basically the aliens that talk are sentient, and Porgs, Fathiers, Tauntauns, Banthas, even Vulptuxes, even the Krayt Dragon, Mudhorn.
Hmm.
Those are not sentient. Endorian chicken, so Earth chickens are sentient. Endorian chickens are not sentient. So there's this hierarchy of like which living creatures in Star Wars, you know, and we all know, like, intuitively, the line is kind of blurred between what in Star Wars is an alien or a creature, like an animal.
Right.
Like, Bantha versus Wookiee. Like, how would you instinctively know that difference? And And the problem is that in Star Wars, sentience is what on earth we would consider sentience and sapience all wrapped into one. So sentience in Star Wars is, and I looked this up on Wikipedia to make sure, the quality of self-awareness, abstract thinking, and higher reasoning. So basically it's intelligence. So that's why in Star Wars, a lot of droids are sentient too. I think that's a significant problem, that a lot of droids are considered sentient in Star Wars, but not like Fathiers.
Right.
I don't like that. And it shows like this preference for intelligence over just ability to have feelings and to feel pain and stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, essentially. I'm trying to think of lower kind of what's the least kind of thinking or the creature that we have the least evidence of them thinking, and yet we consider them a creature, you know, a sentient being, and not necessarily like a Gamorrean guard. We see them just kind of walking around and grunting, and there's some intelligence to it, but we see that from other things that we consider more animals in you know, like a Fathiar and a Gamorrean guard. I wouldn't necessarily put much space between them as far as or even like, you know, the Rancor. Like, why is the Rancor creature a monster?
Right. And I think that's another thing. First of all, Gamorrean guards are considered sentient.
Yeah.
And I think the through line is like whether the humans can communicate with them, like whether they can speak basic or whether a protocol droid knows how to, like, it all comes down to communication. Honestly, I think it's a very ableist way of categorizing society. And can you imagine how problematic that would be on Earth?
Right.
To consider just the intelligent species or people more worthy, more sentient.
Well, that is kind of how it is on Earth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are a lot of weird demarcations on Earth too that we.
Yeah, basically, if an animal tastes good, we'll eat it. You know, we don't care how smart it is. Unfortunately, yeah. I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm just saying that, you know, we tend to think of every, you know, there's humans, and then there's a line where every other animal is on there, and if you're on the other side of that line, then you're, you know, we can pretty much do whatever we want with you. So.
Yeah, right. Which I mean, I think that's a problem. But I, I think that in Star Wars, like, I think it makes me think of like, okay, take a step back. What point of view is Star Wars told from? Okay, so I guess we're getting this mostly through human point of view. So can we really take at face value what they consider these terms? Is this the Wills speaking? Are the Wills one day going to be like, you know what, let's rethink sentience? Right. I don't know, because in Star Wars, there are also all these movements of droid rights, sentient rights, and all that stuff, which it's fine. Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Okay, if the droids can eventually feel feelings, which I think some of them can. Yeah, okay. But then why is there no like animal, why is there no like bantha rights and whatever? And the very small creatures, I think, are actually treated better than the really, really big creatures. And I think there are parallels to that on Earth as well, which is like, you know, I'm watching Clone Wars now. So a few weeks ago, I was at the episode where there's this big Zillow beast who's basically like Godzilla. And it is a devastating episode. Like, they're like trying to kill this big beast. And it's like, this beast is clearly in pain, and they take the beast from its like they clearly put the beast in a situation where they take it away from its place, and they put it in a dangerous situation, and then they try to ensnare it, and they shoot at it, and it's like clearly in a lot of pain, and it's very sad. It's very sad. And the Zillow beast is considered to have emerging sentience, but that's it. And the crate dragon we see, I mean, I didn't like in The Mandalorian when the crate dragon died, but okay, I understand if the crate dragon was a threat, I guess, but still, like, on Earth, humans have also caused the near extinction or extinction of many big creatures. Like, it's actually a problem on Earth where the big mammals are actually really dying out. Like, we think we're full of elephants and zebras and tigers and everything, but actually those, the amount of big mammals that are still on Earth is very small, and it takes longer for big mammals to reproduce, and so big creatures are they go extinct more easily, and humans have kind of like, I don't know, expedited that, but will factory farm whatever tons and tons and tons of chickens, the small ones that we can keep docile and like under our control, but like the big creatures, the banthas, the tauntauns, we almost don't give a shit about them, because like in Star Wars, because they're bigger, they're beasts, they're
right,
they're considered beasts once they're past a certain size. So there you go. Sorry.
No, it's true. I it does make me, I'm sure that somewhere within Star Wars there are the kind of animal, the beast rights groups, which we just haven't seen yet, that are, you know, and there are, you know, again, creatures on the edge that we don't, you know, which side do they fall on within
Galaxy's Edge,
yeah.
Well, and I think also, like, we are fortunate enough to live in a time where of relative peace, where we can focus on things like animal rights and stuff like that. But if you're in like a war situation where even human creature or, you know, even, you know, sentient creatures are being killed all the time, like, I imagine there'd be even less, like, in a place where planets are blowing up, I feel like people would be less concerned about, like, oh, are banthas being treated okay when, you know, I don't think if during World War II was probably not a great time to be an animal rights activist, because people are already worried enough about humans surviving that, it's a relatively privileged position to be in, where you can say, okay, well, these things that we're eating as food, should we really be eating them as food? Is that not a good thing to do? You know, so anyway.
I think that whether or not we're going through hard, I think the onus isn't, it's a collective problem. It's not like a individuals making bad choices problem, because none of us can see from our own insular perspective that the banthas are dying out. We have no idea. Like, I didn't know until I had to learn the fact that all these tigers and lions and whatever I learned about in school and saw at zoos, I had to learn that, oh, actually, you know, I think the plain, like, Serengeti is like full of them. And I have this perception in my mind that there's so many of those in the world. I had to learn that that's not true. And it's not necessarily my fault, specifically me, but
the way
we
it's
do know that, like, collect, it's like collective human, you know, pollution. And it's all these things that are just like, it's no one's fault. It's just like, something, it's a cause and effect circumstance that is happening. And honestly, well, yeah, I think it's not something that an individual can change. I think it's something collectively, organizational. Like, I just think it's a much bigger thing. And so, like, the Fawdier industry, I feel like, is something where, okay, you can be one ethical writer, sure. You cannot tase your Fawdier, okay, that's great, but CantoBite is full of war profiteers. It's full of people that like to make money. They don't care. And even this person, what's his name, Bilbo Baggins, like,
mm-hmm.
Bilwarg, whatever,
Bargwill Tonder,
like, he is also, he's not the main criminal here. There's people over him that are making him do that. And at the end of the day, they all have to make money. Their Fawdiers have to perform. They have to, you know, they keep the Fawdier races going 24/7, actually. They keep the stadium lit up all the time so that they can have more races going out through the day. So you never know what time it is. They talk about in the book how, like, it's not like they just happen at 6 o'clock every day. It's like they keep Fawdier races going on perpetually so that people in CantoBite can just feel like they're always, they don't know what time it is.
Right. Although I will say that even though he's you know, essentially just doing his job. He doesn't, he is whipping children. So it's yeah. it's, you know, he's not blameless,
he's
but he's
machine.
Also, he's a cog
not
in the machine,
blameless?
But he's also whipping
children.
But
he can break
children,
the chain.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of which,
he doesn't look too broken up about her.
We get to see the press dubbed Broom Boy for the first time, better known as Temmery Blagg.
Yeah.
And I remember there being a lot of speculation as to would he show up in the third movie as the new generation of Jedi?
Mm.
And so
I
far,
I never thought he was going to show up again.
Really?
I think he showed up at Tony Stark's funeral, right? And everybody was confused. They're like, wait a minute.
What?
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, okay.
Blip.
Not a Marvel person.
All I know is I wish I could put my fist through this entire lousy, beautiful town.
Hmm.
I go back and forth on whether I like that line or not.
I like it.
I don't mind it.
Because lousy beautiful is a good. It's a good.
I know that's why. That's why.
That's what makes it good. If she just said, I just want to put my fist through this whole lousy town, I would be like, it's kind of. But lousy beautiful adds a little nuance, adds a little wrinkle to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds very film noir to me.
Because right. She loves it and hates it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we do, we just touched upon this. We're talking about the ethics of fathiers, but, this is where the crux of the, kind of moral of at least this part of the story comes in with the Star Wars, the great, we all love these Star Wars, but wars are, you know, they have a
price. They
don't
make one great.
Yeah, they do make these guys great because great in terms of their bank accounts because it's we've come really essentially this is like not a full circle but like something that the especially the very first Star Wars the motion picture was you know very often literally black and white in terms of just kind of a very kind of like old film serial, just kind of basic, you know, story about heroes and villains. And then as the franchise expands, you know, we get more kind of wrinkles to that. And here is the
nuance,
kind of very, you know, getting underneath all of that and questioning the Star Wars. Well, there's only one way to get rich off of one way to get this much money, and it's Star Wars. It's selling weapons to the First Order, and as we'll later learn, potentially to some other.
I actually really like this. I like this war profiteer thing.
Yeah.
I think it's an added layer that we need in Star Wars. And I note that Rose says there's only one way you can get this rich, and Finn says war, and she says selling weapons to the First Order, and both are right. But I actually think Finn is more right because Rose, from her point of view, because she's, you know, with the resistance.
Right.
She sees it as like selling weapons to the First Order is the bad part. And I mean, or is the part that makes you rich. But what they really are doing is they're selling weapons to everyone.
Right.
And war is probably more accurate.
Yeah. She's maybe not seeing it because she's coming at it from her point of view. But Finn, who's been on both sides, is more.
And she also, I think we learn more from the secondary code breaker that that they're selling to both sides. So right. Rose maybe thinks that they're only selling to the First Order.
Right.
Because we would never buy from them.
Right.
But, I mean, they get their stuff from someone. So
I know. But how often do we do things not knowing exactly the chain of, like, how we got those things?
Right.
I think we like to think that we're not involved with Canto Bight as much as we are.
Yeah. I do applaud the anti-capitalist message of the film. I do.
Yeah,
I do like that.
Too.
Yeah.
So points for them. Anything else for minute 57 before we got more Canto Bight action coming up?
We start with Rose's theme here.
Hmm.
Yeah. Any musical? Well, I guess you can.
Yeah. Oh, is that? Okay. Yeah. I was going to ask about that. Because you mentioned, I think yesterday, Rose's theme, and I was like, "What is Rose's theme?" And then once you just sang a little bit right there, I was like, "Oh yeah, I know Rose's theme." I'm notoriously very kind of music blind when it comes to this stuff. So I'm glad you're here to tell us these things.
I have an episode coming up where I'm going to really delve into Rose's theme from five points of view. So
ooh, nice.
Look out for that on my show.
Well, okay. We'll all be tuning in for that. And if that's not enough podcasting for you, dear listener, go to moviesbyminutes.com. That's where you'll find the complete catalog of all of the people breaking down their movies by minutes. Hey, Sam, is your show listed on there? Pete, do you know if it would?
I actually don't know. How do I get on that?
I know some people.
Okay. Yeah. Connect me with them, please.
Yeah, I'll make sure it gets added to that because it's...
It definitely fits in the mandate.
More so than some of the other shows that are on there. But I like the community. I like the people. Again, there are no rules, but some people are approaching the format very liberally, and that's fine. Welcome, everybody. I'm not gatekeeping, but Star Wars Music Minute should definitely be
on. Come on, Broom Boy.
Yeah. So go to moviesbyminutes.com, check that out, and join us tomorrow for another Star Wars Minute.
Star Wars Minute.